What happened in the news this week that you would like to talk about? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In our Week in Review, we will talk with two guests from different political perspectives about the top state, national, international news stories of the week. And we'll welcome your input. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm sure that we will talk about the situation in Ferguson, Missouri. We'll talk about the suicide of Robin Williams. We'll also talk about the results of this week's primary and the matchups that are going to occur for the November election, including we'll talk about some of the too close to call races for Congress and State Senate. And again, welcome the news story that you want to talk about. Let me welcome our guests. David Blaska is a former Dane County supervisor. His Blaska's Bring It blog can be found at ibmadison.com. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Joy.
And also with us is Christine Bremer-Moogley, attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau and one of Wisconsin's presidential electors. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks to both of you for being with us. I wanted to start off the Week in Review on a sad note. Former Price County Democratic Chair and a regular Week in Review contributor, John Smart of Park Falls, passed away this week. His memorial was yesterday, and we are just rest in peace, John Smart. Christine, I believe you knew John, did you not?
Yes, I did. And for us who knew him, it's just been a very sad time for us because John was just well known and well beloved to us. He was someone that, you know, I think at his memorial was yesterday in Park Falls, and I couldn't get there because I was in Madison, unfortunately, but I know Dave Obie was there, and he played the harmonica, and everyone that was there just gave him a tribute for being just a kind and gracious man. You know, he was, you know, on your show a lot, and when you invited me to come on, he used to give me tips. So John was just, and whenever I was done with the show, he'd always write me a note and give me a little critique about what I did right or did wrong, but he was always very generous and kind, and I know he was someone that you appreciated, Joy. So I think we all should thank John for being the kind of guy he was. You know, he was in business, and then he retired from business and joined the Peace Corps, as you know, and was in Uzbekistan. And then when he came back from the Peace Corps, he mentored so many young people. And at his memorial service, so many were there to say that he made a huge difference in their lives and directed them in a way that they wouldn't have had that. So I just think we should all say thanks to John and thanks for his memories, and I hope we can all learn from his civility and in the political process we should remember that.
He was very very civil, very very kind. He did visit our studios here in Madison with a couple of his exchange student sons. He called them his sons. He would host foreign exchange students. And he also hosted me. I did a Tell Joy Where to Go assignment to northern Wisconsin, and he showed me around Flambeau Rama in Park Falls. So it was a treat, though, to know John Smart, and we pay our respects to him. So, and I know David Blaska, you were on this show with John Smart, but
yes.
You did not know him personally.
No, I did not.
Yeah. But let's here's another very sad story to talk about during our Week in Review. David, what was your reaction to the news that Robin Williams had committed suicide?
Well, I think like all Americans, shocked. He was a part of my generation, the baby boom generation, and our immediate thoughts. We have in our family a fair amount of bipolar, and my sister met the same fate, suffered from the same illness, and so it's something that touches, I think, a lot of people more than you think. And of course, you can't he certainly hit it well. His public didn't know about that. People talk about comedy being born of pain, and sometimes we laugh so that we don't cry. And then our thoughts were for our son, who was very affected by his aunt's death and suffers from some of the same things, including depression. So it's a constant worry, and it's a terrible disease because it denies you enjoyment of life when it hits.
I didn't know that, David, and certainly my condolences. And you never know the battles and struggles that people are going through for the most part. Christine, your reflections on Robin Williams' death.
Well, you know, for those of my age, you know, I remember him from Mork and Mindy, you know, so that was when I first got to know Robin Williams, and it was so shocking, you know, to hear of his death. So, you know, I was reading an editorial about him, and it said, you know, how he would perform, and afterwards he'd be seeking, you know, people to tell him he did a good job and that he was really so insecure. And it's hard to believe in the face of such genius, you know. So I think we never know what people really suffer, and we should keep that in mind when people are so critical of others, and that it can torment certain people, and we should be more kind about it. So God bless you, Robin Williams. We sure had a lot of great laughs, and I have great memories.
Yeah. And it was revealed by Robin Williams' wife just yesterday that the actor was in the early stages of Parkinson's disease, which was something we did not know, which can also contribute to depression. And he had more going on than we even knew. But, you know, I think that we should move on to some other very troubling news of the week. There were several nights of unrest in Ferguson, Missouri, near St. Louis, following the police shooting, a fatal shooting of a unarmed African American teenager. The situation got so tense that even President Obama weighed in yesterday. Let's take a listen.
Now's the time for healing. Now's the time for peace and calm on the streets of Ferguson. Now is the time for an open and transparent process to see that justice is done.
And last night, there were protests in Ferguson and elsewhere, for that matter, but they were largely peaceful, which there was actually a change in that the local police department was not policing the protest in Ferguson, but the state troop or the state patrol was. Christine, your response, your reaction to what has been going on in Ferguson this week.
Well, you know, I think that the police response to protests of a community where a young man was allegedly shot unarmed while fleeing a police officer, I guess. When the police respond with rubber bullets and tear gas in neighborhoods and aiming sniper rifles at protesters, I think that that's an overreach, and I think almost everyone agrees with that. I don't know if you think that, Dave, but I think on both sides of the aisle, nobody is comfortable with the police in a war zone scenario in our cities. And so I think that it was an overreach and an overreaction, and it led to this horrible violence. And so I'm glad that it's simmered down. It seems like the governor's taken the right action, and I hope that there can be peace now. But we should keep in mind that we're not a war zone. This country shouldn't be in a war zone mentality with peaceful protesters. And protesters have to keep in mind that they have to maintain, you know, calm if they can. But, you know, when there are people that have a legitimate right to protest, they shouldn't be met with police bullets, and they shouldn't be met with police and tanks. You know, I wonder about little communities, 29,000 people in that community, and some of the equipment those cops had. It's kind of overwhelming. So I think it's time for us to have a look at this, and I'm glad that President Obama called for that.
Mm-hmm. David?
Well, I don't think any of us knew that Ferguson, Missouri existed. I guess it's a suburb of St. Louis. And if I've driven through it, I'm not cognizant of that. So we don't know Ferguson, Missouri. They have 53 police officers for a town about the size of Beaver Dam, I think. That seems like a lot. Only three of which are black. That's a problem. In a community that is something like 70% black, that's a major problem. There's a disconnect there. So I don't know what's going on there. There's no excuse for that. But having said that, there's no excuse for looting either. No excuse for kicking out car windows or throwing explosive devices and rocks at the police. You know, if you're going to teach your children anything, is don't struggle for a policeman's gun. There's some information that that's what happened and led to the shooting. So the young man was unarmed. But when you struggle for a policeman's gun, we had that happen in Madison. It was white on white. And the young man was shot and killed. I don't think, you know, race was an issue there. It's more or less when you try to get the policeman's gun, that's what they do. They shoot you. You know, we talked about Robin Williams and the and the boomer generation. I mean, this is so deja vu all over again, Joy. This is 1968. This is Detroit. When do we get past this at some point? We still have an underclass in America. I'm not going to go on a soapbox about Paul Ryan, but there are very few people thinking seriously about what's the next step? How do we get beyond this? And I think that's what we really have to be thinking about, including, you know, the black-on-black killing fields of Chicago, where I think 80% of the 1,320 people shot so far this year, as of June, in other words, the first 6 months, 1,320 shot and wounded, 213 shot and killed, 80% were black, and most of it was black-on-black. So there's an issue there, and we need to grapple with it beyond rubber bullets and police shields.
Christine, what's your response to that?
I absolutely agree with Dave. I think that it's what we're facing in this country is horrific, and we've got to look at the root causes for it and see if we can do something about it rather than, you know, sloganeering. We have to look at the causes and try to really help the communities come together. The militarization of the police is not the answer. And sometimes the looting is a response to being faced with a bunch of police and military fatigues walking down your block. I mean, anger just gets worse and worse. And so I think that now that the community is trying to come together, I think it should stop. And I think Dave makes an excellent point. This is a majority of the community in Ferguson is black. It's 70% black, and all of the political leaders are white, and most of the police force is white. It's just not a good message here, and we need to do something about it and look at what's going on. So I agree with Dave. This is a throwback to when I was in college.
Yeah. Well, we heard that there was President Obama said there's no excuse for the looting that was going on, but he also said there's no excuse for excessive force by police. We had journalists getting arrested and tossed in jail, or at least taken into custody briefly on Wednesday. Did the police overreact, David, in this?
They probably did. I mean, they probably did. And I think the citizenry also overreacted. You know, I'm thankful, I guess. You know, we haven't had that in Wisconsin. We hear about Milwaukee, and I'm certainly familiar with Milwaukee. I used to spend a fair amount of time professionally with the welfare reform efforts of Tommy Thompson. We haven't had that there. I think that's a testament to the community. There's some good leaders in the community there, people like Michael Holt and whatnot, and the police force and the. But there's, you know, it's been called one of the most segregated cities in America. So, but we have black elected leaders there. We have a congressman there. So there's a difference, I think, and I think, you know, not to say that we're better than Ferguson, Missouri, but it has to be a path forward. And I think there has to be a sense that there is opportunity, that there is a way out beyond smashing the glass at the Walmart store and taking what you can grab. There has to be a sense that you can succeed, and I think that's what our political leadership should be looking for, is how do you grow the middle class? How do you provide an opportunity society?
Let me take a call. Sheree in Waupun is with us. Hello, Sheree.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I have to admit, I have been absolutely sick and horrified and disgusted this entire week about what's going on in Ferguson. It's amazing to me when people talk about, like, for instance, the looting that took place. It started with a protest. I heard one guest just mention that he thought the citizenry overreacted. But when there is such a low-level policing of a community where from the time you get out of basically walking down the street and now you're in jail for literally walking down the street, you know, it's so frustrating. And then someone gets shot, and then it turns into, oh, look what's happening. We have to bring out these police because we have to control this population. I really believe that the police reacted that way in order to keep what looked like a criminal focus on people that were actually just exercising their rights. And to notice that the change took place in the protesting when the protesters felt protected. It was when we felt threatened that we looted, because it's such frustration. There's not an excuse for looting, but there's a reason for it. And the reason is frustration of not being able to walk down a simple street without the fear of being shot. It's not something that you have to think about. It's something that I have to think about because I have a black son. The things that we teach our children are different than what you as white people teach your children. The fear is real, and I'm really tired of being told, okay, wait for justice. Just wait. Let's look at this. We've been waiting for years to stop being abused by the police. We've waited for years for justice that hasn't come in so long, and yet we keep saying, shh, don't overreact. Just be quiet, and we'll help and take care of it, and then there's another Band-Aid or program. How about we really look at sentencing disparities for blacks versus white? How our black men can't get out and make a good living because of something that took place when they were juvenile, but they were charged as adults, whereas someone else who was not black didn't get charged. Never saw that. Never started with that strike. That's what's really going on in America, and I'm really tired of it.
David, do you blame her?
No, I don't. I mean, I think that her sentiments are heartfelt, but I think she knows too very well that her black son is less likely to be shot by a police officer, black or white, than by another black young man. That is statistic. I mean, that's not, it's sad, but that is statistically correct. And that is, you know, we read about in the national press when a white police officer shoots a black man. We read about that.
But nobody disagrees black-on-black crime isn't a problem.
Right, and that's something I think that, you know, we have to address. And I wish that some of the so-called civil rights leaders would address that. And that is the real problem, I think, in America today.
Well, I mean...
I guess, Joy, I would just like to say, I think Sherry just made some excellent points that, you know, we that live in middle-class communities, mostly white communities, and we don't have police situations like that, how can we even understand what it's like to have a child that you have to protect from the police? You know, I grew up in Chicago, and I understand a bit about what can happen when police get out of control. But I can tell you that the militarization of the police is not an answer. And when you have, you know, families that have to say, be careful of the police, where are we going? You know, I know black on black is terrible, but we can do so much better. And I think everyone agrees that the police should not be shooting at unarmed kids that are running away if that's what happened. And I think that this is a really good point, and we have to really be sensitive to what she says.
Well, I think we are. And I agree with you, Christine, but I think it was just a few months ago in Milwaukee, I think an 8-year-old girl was caught in the crossfire.
Right.
Between gangs in Milwaukee. It wasn't police shooting. Actually, even here in Madison and Meadowood, I attended a meeting, a troubled neighborhood, where father talked about, and this happens, and you hear about this in Milwaukee all the time, putting their children to bed in a bathtub because it's made out of cast iron, impervious to bullets. So, and these are not police shooting through the windows. I think if we can concentrate on the anomaly, which it is, and it certainly might have been police misconduct, that we don't know yet. And I presume that the governor of Missouri will assure, and with the nation looking, will assure that, if there's been an injustice, that the, miscreant will be charged with a felony. But to say that is the problem in America today is missing, I think, the larger problem.
Well, David, Sheree was saying that it's not just this shooting in Ferguson, which is still under investigation, obviously, but that there are racial disparities in our criminal justice system, in sentencing,
right.
In arresting, and in profiling.
Right.
So it's not, I mean,
right.
Yes, black-on-black crime might be a problem,
right.
But what about all these other things?
Right, when you're looking at a situation where there is let's face it, 80-year-old grandmas are not likely to be shooting in a gang. So if you kind of don't patrol too much the old folks' home, you probably don't. But where there are a lot of unattended young males of any race, that's likely to be, there's more likelihood to be a crime there. So yes, I'm certain that there is injustice and that there's, but what's causing the problem? What's the root? And to say that the police are the problem and the people of Ferguson would be happy with an all-black force, I'm not sure that is the case. I mean, I don't know if Ferguson is like, you know, Gary, Indiana, or, or some of the sections of Los Angeles, that, you know, Watts and whatnot that you read about, but I don't know that. But there's a sense that it might be. Is white police officers, are they throughout America shooting innocent black teenagers? Probably not to the extent that the attention is given.
Christine?
I just think that, you know, Dave, we just can't generalize and say that we're saying that the police are the problem here. The problem was a horrible thing happened. The people were upset, rightfully so, about what happened. They wanted answers. The police refused to give answers. And then when the people protest because there's no transparency and nobody knows what's going on, we've got police and military fatigue with rifles, tear gas, assaulting peaceful protesters at first on the street, throwing a journalist in jail and arresting them for doing nothing. And we have this overreach. So I don't think we should generalize. We should look at this situation. It was a bad situation, and we should say this should not have happened. We don't live in war zones. The cities should be protected, and it should be preserve and protect, not go in there and try to...
Let me jump in because I have one related issue before we move on is that U.S. Representative Hank Johnson is pushing for legislation because of the situation in Ferguson, Missouri. He is calling for, he's drafting legislation to limit a Pentagon program that provides surplus military equipment to local law enforcement. Many people, Christine used the term the militarization of our police departments. Do we need to stop giving them this military equipment, Christine?
Well, you know, when you see little towns with sheriff's departments with big SWAT vehicles that are armorized vehicles, and they, you know, in a little town like Wausau, for instance, you got to wonder, what the heck do we need stuff like that for? And I think the more you give that equipment away, the more they're going to want to use it. So, you know, if we need it, that's one thing. But I don't think, generally speaking, that people that issue traffic tickets and get involved with domestic violence need armored tanks. So I think it's something that is a good idea, and we should really remember that. We don't need a military police. We need police to preserve and protect our safety and our freedom.
Right, but let's not generalize, Christine, either. I don't think that they were using tanks. I think, you know, that, you know, like Sherman tank. I think that's a generalization. When you talk about armor, Christine, when you talk about armor, what does the armor protect? It protects the policeman within. If the policeman feels threatened, he will respond. No police officer, no sheriff in America is going to say, "You take the bullet." The Secret Service might for the president, "You take the bullet," but no police officer will tell his uniformed men and women that you take the bullet. They will protect themselves, and that. So I think, you know, the armor itself protects the police officer. Is when that. Whether or not this is the case, but the case could be made that the police officer who shot the unarmed young man felt threatened by apparently a struggle for his weapon. So I'm not afraid of armor. And if we want to generalize, let's also talk about war zones. Some sections of Chicago are war zones.
I don't have time to generalize. but do you think that even if there weren't tanks in Ferguson, that police departments need this military equipment, this lawmaker wants to put an end to that?
I think some of them do, yes.
Yeah. We are talking with David Blaska, former Dane County Supervisor, and Christine Bremer-Moogley, attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices, about the news of the week. We're going to move on to talk about our state primary coming up after the break. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Christine Bremer-Moogley and David Blaska. And with you, if you'd like to talk about the state primary this week and where these races are headed, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Wisconsin had its primary election this week, and we'll touch on a few of those races, starting with the 6th Congressional District, where 4 Republicans were vying to replace U.S. Representative Tom Petri. State Senator Glenn Grothman leads State Senator Joe Lipholm by just 214 votes. Grothman had been declared the winner by the AP earlier in the evening, but then the AP retracted that proclamation as more and more votes started coming in, putting Joe Lipholm closer and closer. So, David Blaska, how do you want to see this play out?
Well, I know a little bit. Glenn Grothman, he is He is a treasure. He really is. He is a true intellectual, in the sense that Daniel Patrick Moynihan was, and much reviled by his own party. And he, like, I use that example advisedly because Moynihan famously talked before he became a U.S. Senator about the disintegration of the black family and its attendant social pathologies, and this is something that Glenn Grothman's been talking about, and we talk about root causes. Glenn Grothman talks about root causes. You don't always have to agree with him, and I some of your news items, Joy, obviously the Democratic Party is going to do a little bit of pandering, perhaps, or a little bit of trying to, for the quick hit, the politics of the matter, but somebody's got to think long, seriously, and hard about some of these root causes. And people like Congressman Paul Ryan and Glenn Grothman are doing that.
Your thoughts on this, the 6th congressional race, Christine?
I'm still trying to get over you comparing him to Daniel Patrick Moynihan. I can't put my arms around that one. I'm sure he's rolling over in his grave. I understand, there might be some issues with regard to them not following party line, but I mean, that's about as far as it goes, I think. But with regard to Glenn, he is an independent, he truly is in certain things. And I've found that on issues that have been near and dear to me that I actually truly agreed with him on, with regard to some legislation last year, et cetera. We truly had agreement with Glenn Grothman, which was surprising to me. But when it comes to some of these issues of women's health, he is, for women, his positions are truly outrageous. And you don't have to go far other than listening to his own words to get women really, really, really angry with the things he says. And so I think he's going to have a difficult time getting any women to support his candidacy. So, and this goes on both sides of the line, parties.
I just have to ask you, Christine, maybe you've parsed the results from the 6th District. You're saying that Glenn Grothman had no female votes?
I think that he might have had some female votes. No, I'm not saying that, but I think that the great majority of women, we had a 10% turnout, Dave. I think the great majority of women, when it comes to the general election, will find that his positions are antithetical to anything they believe in, and so that he will have a very grave difficulty in getting women to come to his side. But I wanted to ask a question, Joy, if I could. Dave, what do you think about the way the count went in Sheboygan County?
I don't know. It came in late, apparently, and someone pre-called it. But Joe Lieberman is very, very popular there. That's his home Senate district.
Right.
And so, you know, he did very well there. It's a close election, and he's an honorable man, too. Less outspoken than Glenn Grossman, less willing to, you know, there are some people who want to get elected to be somebody, and there are other people who want to be elected to do something. I don't know about Joe. I'm not saying that about him. But about Glenn Grossman, he wants to do something. He wants to make a difference. He wants to make a change. And I contrast that, you know, Jim Doyle, for instance. I'm not sure what he did as per, you know, Tommy Thompson, who definitely, and for that matter, Scott Walker, definitely roiled the waters. But at the end of the day or at the end of their terms, you know, in Ronald Reagan, they made a difference.
Christine, you're in the 7th District where there was a Democratic primary for the right to run against U.S. Representative Sean Duffy. Kelly Westland came out the winner of that Democratic primary. What do you know about her? Can she topple Duffy this fall?
Kelly Westland is a young woman. She's a very exciting candidate to us up here because she is... she's a fighter. You know, she comes out of Ashland, the councilwoman from there, and, you know, she started out from humble roots, and she's really, you know, worked her way around the northern part of this district and has really gotten to people and talked to people and found a great deal of support, you know. So I think she's going to, you know, the money issue is a huge issue with regard to any campaign like this. I mean, her money is very small compared to the money of a sitting congressman like Congressman Duffy. But she's getting out and giving a good message, and Kelly is an exciting candidate for us. So we'll see how she does. I think she's gonna give Duffy some pause for concern.
Do you want to talk about
no
the 7th? I didn't think so. I could tell. What about the 1st where Paul Ryan defeated Jeremy Ryan? Is that a big surprise to you, David Blaska?
No. Next.
Next.
Some of these races, Joy, are just kind of not big yawns. You know, we knew that there wasn't going to be much of a primary like with Kelly, and there was no question she was going to win the primary, no question that Duffy would win his. So, you know, you wonder why all this money is being spent on primaries sometimes.
Well, let's talk about some of the state Senate primaries briefly. There was a very close race in the 17th district. That is where Republican Dale Schultz currently represents. We had two Democratic challengers. Ernie Whitwer topped Pat Bomhack, who was endorsed by Senate Minority Leader Chris Larson, by just 2 votes. So it was a two-vote victory for Ernie Whitwer, but not exactly, since there has to be an official canvass, and then there possibly could be a recall. The winner will face State Representative Howard Markline in November. Democrats say that they like their chances of taking back this seat. What do you say, Christine?
Well, can you imagine having a 2-vote margin if you had run? And, you know, what do you do about that? So they, you know, they don't want to, I'm certain that these two great candidates don't want to fire at each other, and they want to get at it. So it's going to be difficult. If there's a recall, they have to spend their time on a recount. Rather, they have to spend their time on the recount and not, you know, campaigning against Howard Markline. And it's a district that's in play. So, you know, this will be a very interesting time in the next few weeks to see what happens with this. You know, but I think that in light of the way that district is made up, you know, that could be something that really is up in the air with regard. We can't say, for instance, for sure this is going Republican or for sure this will go Democrat. This could go either way. And that's why this vote is really important.
Mm-hmm. What do you say, David?
Well, I agree with Christine in that this is being tied up to further recall here. Both, you know, there's no... If I wanted to write a check to whom, for a Democratic check, to whom would I write it? Right now, that checkbook is closed. So this is accruing to Howard Markline's benefit. And he is a sitting state rep in that Senate district, so and you know, very well financed. Which, by the way, you talked about money, Christine, about your candidate up there on the 7th not getting
that.
This is why I've always talked, and I'll get a little plug in here. Blow the doors off of campaign finance limits. You know, this is it's always been an incumbent protection scheme.
Well, we have to take another break. And then when we come back, we will talk about the Attorney General's race in Wisconsin. We'll talk about the primary for Milwaukee County Sheriff. And we'll also talk about the race for governor. Mary Burke, of course, defeated her primary challenger on Tuesday. Now she will be facing Scott Walker officially. We'll talk about that in the latest in the race for governor as well. And our Week in Review quiz, that's coming up here on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Time now for our Week in Review quiz. 75 years ago this week, The Wizard of Oz had its world premiere. In which Wisconsin city? That's right, 75 years ago, The Wizard of Oz premiered in what Wisconsin city? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll give you the next 5 minutes to guess the answer. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers and announce the winner and the answer at the end of the program. And David Blaska has it wrong. And we'll see if he just handed it. Yeah, so don't say what the right answer is. But that we are talking with David Blaska and Christine Bremer-Moogley during this edition of the Week in Review. And let's talk about this race for, I want to talk about the race for a Milwaukee County Sheriff. I know normally a sheriff's race would not be of statewide interest, but this one kind of is. Sheriff David Clark beat his Democratic opponent, but he was considered the beneficiary of probably some crossover voting. David, set the stage for us here.
Well, yeah, David Clark is a black man. He likes to wear a cowboy hat. He rides a horse. He famously or infamously, depending on your stand, cut a radio spot, a public service ad, basically saying, you want to defend your home and family, be proficient in firearms because, you know, men are trained, but when seconds count, we'll be there in minutes, essentially. And he's sort of the bête noire of liberals. He identifies as a Democrat. But Tommy Thompson urged a crossover vote for him as opposed to, I think his name was Christopher Mose, if I'm pronouncing that right, who was a police lieutenant on the city of Milwaukee Police Force, who was supported by the Democratic Party establishment. And that is a partisan race, by the way. All sheriffs are in Wisconsin. Mose was supported by Mayor Barrett and also by Chris Abley, is that, am I pronouncing that correctly, the Milwaukee
yes.
County Executive. So this was, and plus you had Mayor Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York City. He has, you know, he's a billionaire, and he threw $150,000 against David Clark. The Greater Wisconsin Committee threw $400,000 against David Clark, some of which was teachers' union dues money. It was one of those dark money groups that Democrats talk about. But he won anyway. And his closing statement was, you know, the voters can't be bought. And that's my larger point, is that voters can't be bought. They make their own decisions.
Christine.
Dave, I wonder how you know that teachers' money went into that, because no one really knows where the money came from. But I'm flummoxed by that comment. But you
write
know,
it down. It's true.
Won, well, I don't think so. But, you know, he only won in the city of Milwaukee by 624 votes. This crossover was very significant, you know, very significant. And we could see it in the votes that came in the gubernatorial race for Brett Halsey in areas where there were no Democrats. I mean, so I think that was important. But Clark, you know, for a northern person, you know, he's kind of interesting to me. I don't get the benefit of seeing these ads. But, you know, someone that tells you that 911 is not best and you need to be in the game by that, I guess that's the review ad you're talking about,
yes,
Dave.
Yes, that's correct.
Kind of a fascinating situation. And a guy that wears a cowboy hat and wears a gun on an open carry and
rides a horse as a county sheriff from Milwaukee. That's a little odd. And you know, this thing about the Wild West, I mean, in the Wild West, they didn't allow people to have open carry. So I just wonder what's going on here. And you know, I know there was a lot of money from Mayor Bloomberg. What was it, $400,000 they're talking about? Or at least he got a lot, $150,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's because there's people in this country that feel very strongly about gun control. And we were talking about that a little bit before when we started this conversation this morning. So,
sure.
You know, I think this is a very interesting situation in Milwaukee County. Is this guy going to run for mayor against Tom Barrett? Is that what we're looking at? I don't know, but he's quite a character. I think arming the public is not the purpose of what we should be doing here with regard to what the police role should be in our country. And I don't know if he's espousing that, but it's kind of alarming to me.
Well, Christine,
so, I don't know. What do you think about that, Dave? You think arming the public is the answer?
Yeah, I mean, I'm armed. Not at the moment.
Are you right now, Joy?
No, he's not at the moment.
Not at the moment, I said. But I do have a concealed. There's about 300,000 folks who went through the course and paid $50 and had their background checked for any criminality. And somehow I survived that process. And yes, I have a concealed carry permit. There are 300,000 of us. Christine, and I don't think...
I'm not talking against concealed carry.
And
I'm talking about a sheriff saying arming the public is the answer to protecting your family, and I just think that...
You
that
don't think...
vigilantism is the right thing, and I don't think that's what most people think.
Well, excuse me, though, but Christine, you don't think that I should have a small firearm or even a large one in my home to protect myself? I mean, that's what he was talking about. And for a sheriff to... I mean, well, I think he's being very realistic, but... The larger point is, yes, Michael Bloomberg has a right to spend his money however he wants to. I'm a libertarian on that regard. But people decided. And obviously, they had, if you want to call it a referendum on your issue, on the gun control issue, the people of Milwaukee County decided.
Let's go to a caller. Nate in Milwaukee. Hello, Nate.
Hi. Well, I wanted to add a little bit more to that, and that if there was an issue in the crossover vote appeal, it certainly wasn't being tough on crime because, and this is unusual, I think, the Republican Party in the 4th Congressional District told its members that if they decided to vote in the Democratic primary, they should vote for both David Clark for sheriff and Gary George for Congress. And Gary George is basically a felon who was involved in a kickback scheme. So that's not exactly about law and order.
Well, this whole thing about being back in the saddle and arming the public, you know, for someone from the north and who is not really that familiar with what's going on with the sheriff in Milwaukee, this is just fascinating stuff. I think he got the benefit of a very powerful NRA lobby that can put out messages to its members without spending a ton of money, and I don't think NRA really did. I think it was under $100,000. Is that right, Dave?
$30,000, and I'm a member of NRA. There are a lot of us.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of us apparently in Milwaukee, too. So
we're called. There's a lot of them up here. There's tons of people in the NRA.
Oh, Dave Obey always got the NRA endorsement. He had to. I mean, if he wanted to get elected in your district up there in northern Wisconsin, he had to.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what his private views were, and I don't care. He had to be pro-gun in that to survive electorally in that area.
That's right. People like guns.
Well, we have to talk about a couple of other races, boring as they may be. No, Jefferson County DA Susan Happ handily won the Democratic primary for Attorney General this week. She took 52% of the vote in a 3-person race, beating Dane County DA Ishmael Ozan and State Representative John Richards of Milwaukee. Why do you suppose voters went with Happ, Christine?
It's the year of the woman. Mary Burke's going to win too. The year of the woman, and Susan Happ is a prosecutor who won in a Republican county, and she's very charismatic. She's smart. She knew what she needed to do. You know, I personally am a good friend of John Richards, and I think he would have been a fantastic attorney general as well, but I certainly can get behind Susan Happ, and I think a lot of women felt that way as well, and so I think she's going to be a really formidable candidate. Very fine candidate.
She's going to be a tough candidate, Dad?
Yes, very much so. I think she's, I think Brad Schimmel should be very concerned. I knew that Susan Happ would win. As soon as I saw her video ad here comes a big Harley Davidson roaring down. I just bought a Fat Boy Low, so I mean, she had me right there. I mean, I love Harleys. And I mean, what other product do you have tattooed on? You know, people don't tattoo, WPR. I mean, you do, maybe. But I guess I should just. No, I'm looking. No, I don't see it. But you know, it's a great brand. But how many? So when I saw that ad and off she, and she gets off that big motorcycle, and it's a woman. Okay, my pop. And there are a lot of women in my writing group. But she takes off the the goggles and whatnot. So there's that. And also, I think her stand on not criminalizing a first DWI, I think, this is still Wisconsin. I think that resonates. But just one other quick, so I think she's a very formidable candidate. One other point, though, the Democratic Party hierarchy, I mean, they chose, they trained, and they vetted Mary Burke, but they're not doing too well. John Richards was their choice in the Senate district. Pat Baumhack was a choice of Chris Larson and whatnot. And this top-down thing, I think, boy, that, you know, Republicans used to be accused of that, but now it seems like the Democratic Party, Christine, am I wrong? The Democratic Party is getting directions from Chris Larson in a kind of a top-down fashion.
Well, I don't think you're right. I understand why you think that way. And I understand that Chris Larson, came to our convention and didn't even mention Mr. Whitwer, which did not
yes.
go over well with the
yes.
party regulars. So I don't think you can say that the Democratic Party necessarily supports that, but that's something what the leaders might support. And everybody has a right to their personal opinion. And if Chris Larson believes that's the best candidate, he has a right to put forward the best candidate. He's a leader in the Senate. But with regard to Susan Happ and Ismael Azan, I don't think anyone was supporting anyone in particular. The Democrats were truly divided on this. Attorney General race, because in my opinion, we had three excellent candidates, and any one of them would have been great as far as I'm concerned. I'm happy with Susan Happ. You know, she gets off that Harley, and she's about your size, Joy. I can't ride a Harley. I'm not strong enough, but she gets off that Harley, and she's a strong woman. You know, she is going to be a very formidable candidate.
We have to quickly talk about Mary Burke becoming the first woman to win a major party gubernatorial nomination in state history. This week, she cruised past State Representative Brett Halsey in the Democratic Party. Christine, why do you say Burke is going to win this?
Oh, she's an exciting candidate. I was with her last night in Wausau. She was in Wausau. She's in the Northwoods all week. I was actually in Boulder Junction with her, a huge group of people, very, very excited about her candidacy, very, very happy that she's coming forward. You know, she's so different. I don't know. I've been doing politics for a long time, and I've seen a lot of people speak. Mary Burke is just totally different than most candidates because she is very matter of fact. She's not a politician. You know, she's not someone that you would say is oh well, that's just giving us one of those political answers. She's not like that.
Let me get a word in.
30 seconds for Dave to talk about
woman.
How close is this going to get.
Well, I wrote down a word that Christine used, exciting. Boy, that's not a word I would. Mary Burke may be many things. Exciting is not one of them.
Oh, but a tied race isn't exciting to you, David?
That is exciting. And you know, Scott Walker should be worried. He's got a tremendous money advantage, and he's not getting any traction, any separation. I think that's worrisome for Scott Walker, to be honest.
All right. Well, congratulations to Evan Oconomowoc. Guess where the Wizard of Oz unveiled 75 years ago this week, 1939? It was Oconomowoc. So yes. That is the answer. The Milwaukee Sentinel says that the producers were concerned how this film would be received in the Heartland, and they used the reactions to tweak it a little bit. Thanks to our guests, David Blaska, and to Christine Bremer-Moogley, for being with us. This is the Ideas Network.